Alrighty, we're going to watch today, I think probably the whole time, movies from the 60s. Movies from the. What? Folks, when we watch movies, what are you doing? Are you just sitting back and vegging out? You better not be. This is going to be on the test, folks. A question about the cinematic lives of Jesus is a real good possibility. So, do I need to say anything else? Alrighty. So, when was the last time we had a full-length cinematic life of Jesus? No. At this point. The Cecil B. DeMille, the King of Kings, the silent one. Folks, that had such an impact that no one else thought about making another version of it. Are making another cinematic life of Jesus for what would that be, 40 years? I mean, for a long time. Now, there are all kinds of complicated reasons for that, I think. I think that mostly the whole idea of making a film about Jesus had not yet really settled in to the entertainment world as being something that was okay to do. In 1959, MGM made a ton of money with Ben-Hur. And they thought they had a winner. So they looked back to the 1920s and remembered that the first MGM moguls had made even more money by following the silent Ben-Hur with a silent life of Jesus. So almost as soon as it became obvious that Ben-Hur was really successful, tens of millions of dollars of profit, they began to film a remake of the King of Kings. The problem was that MGM didn't own the King of Kings. That was a Paramount picture a long time ago. All righty? So what are they going to do? They got the lawyers together and they noticed that the Paramount picture from 1929, 27, I guess it was called The King of Kings. So they called theirs King of Kings. And folks, that's the difference. You can show how smart you are if you know which one is which. The sound one is King of Kings. So they gambled again. This time they lost. This time they lost. Now, they chose to make King of Kings, which is going to be a big, huge color spectacle, one of the most controversial directors around at the time, a man named Nicholas Ray. Can anyone tell me a film that Nicholas Ray made in the 1950s that made him popular? Anybody? No, he didn't direct Yama Gantry. The James Dean movie. Rebel Without a Cause. He had made Rebel Without a Cause about this young, angst-ridden young man. For some reason, they decided to let Nicholas Ray, and no one really knows why, because he was certainly not a man of belief. He was a raging alcoholic and one of the worst womanizers in Hollywood. And he spent most of the time in Spain trying to bed down everyone female in the cast. But he made his film, and they nicknamed it inevitably Nicholas Ray's Rebel with a Cause. Boo hiss. Nicholas Ray's Jesus, the scriptwriter's Jesus, is an unusual, ambiguous character. Who is he? Who is Ray's Jesus? First of all, there's nothing mysterious about him. There is certainly nothing apocalyptic about him. He's not Mark's apocalyptic Jesus. And although he does a good job on the Sermon on the Mount, he really is not closely identified here at all with the Jewish tradition. I mean, at all. He's not Matthew's Jewish rabbi. And God knows this man is not John's cosmic Christ. There's not much grandeur at all in Nicholas Ray's Jesus. He is, in fact, Luke's healer, Luke's teacher, Luke's servant. Luke teaching, ministering to a specific group of people set in their own lives, set in an historical time. He's Luke's Jesus. Jesus in this movie has a very close co-star, Mary. Mary comes to the fore, rather spectacularly actually, in this film. She is played by the distinguished Irish actress Shobo McKenna. I call her, this is the know-it-all Mary. It drives me crazy. For 3.5 hours, she kind of does like this, and she knows what's going to happen. She has this kind of knowing, all-knowing smile. She knows what's going to happen. You'll see it. Drives me crazy. Mother knows best. And Ben-Hur, father knew best, right? Yes, he's working. Now, mother knows best. There's a fascinating bond here between Mary and a very, very, very young John. This is the youngest beloved apostle in the tradition. You will see him. You'll see the bond happen. But the real person who holds all of this film together is an invented character. He is the Roman centurion. Folks, historically, writers have had a good time trying to figure out the impact of being the centurion in Jesus' life on that centurion. This centurion has a name. His name is Lucius. And you'll see a lot of him. One of my students in my Cinematic Lives of Jesus course wrote a paper about this character, except he had misunderstood the man's name, and it was all about Centurion Lucius. Lucius is there in the screenplay to guide modern secular people through the story of Jesus. He's kind of like a man out of time. He's sort of like a man out of the Enlightenment. He doesn't believe in miracles at the beginning. He's rational. He's observant. He is humane. He is, in fact, a man of the Enlightenment out of time. And he takes us through the story of Jesus, and we'll watch him. We see him at the beginning, I think, at the slaughter. We're not going to see this, but he is the one who is told by Herod to slaughter the innocents. He tells Herod, "I am a Roman soldier, not a butcher." But he's forced to do it. He knew what happened to all the little babies born in Bethlehem because he did it. We are going to see the next time he sees Jesus, though, because he shows up in Nazareth to take a census. And there is Mary and Joseph and a little boy. Who is he? His name is Jesus. Where was he born? Bethlehem. When? 10 years ago. Uh-oh, light goes on. He knows the prophecy. He knows that this baby should have been killed. He suspects he's the baby who survived. Those of you who like Harry Potter, here is the boy who survives. Actually, I'm serious as a stroke, and I love Harry Potter. I'm talking about Harry Potter. We'll figure out what's going to happen next month or next summer, whenever it is, if it ever gets here. Are you counting the days? I am. All right. I'm serious, actually. The boy who survives. And there is this moment of tension between Mary and Lucius because, now see if we forget it, because they both know that the other one knows. And he lets the boy go. He doesn't do anything. He lets the boy go. And he keeps popping up. He turns out to be John the Baptist's jailer. So John asks to see Jesus, and Jesus comes to visit. So Lucius sees Jesus there and is further impressed by him. When Pilate arrives, he sends the centurion to report on Jesus. He reports back on Jesus to Pontius Pilate. And it is here that we hear the reports of the ministry of Jesus. We don't see a lot of it. We don't see the miracles. We hear them reported, just like in the novel Ben-Hur, by the way. All righty? And, of course, he is at... Oh, no. He is appointed... This is ludicrous, actually. He is appointed, this Roman centurion, he is appointed by Pilate to be Jesus' lawyer at his trial. Rational, reasonable. We are rational, reasonable Romans. We'll see a little bit of it. It is absurd. You'll see it. And then, of course, he is the one who has to execute Jesus. But you will see him. Oh, he also shows up at the Sermon on the Mount. Who knew? Everyone shows up at the Sermon on the Mount here. Everybody. Everybody's at the Sermon on the Mount. And Lucius is at the foot of the cross. He is with him as he's Pilate. They sort of become like this, not emotionally, but they're both getting converted to Christianity. And there he, of course, gets to have the recognition scene, the centurion's recognition scene. The centerpiece of King of Kings is a sermon on a mount, on the mount, that in its original form was 30 minutes long. It's a huge piece, and it dominates the picture. We're going to see some of that. We're also going to see kind of a little bit of a little side issue story about Judas and Barabbas. Barabbas the thief keeps trying to, he's a radical here. He keeps trying to recruit Judas unsuccessfully. And we'll see how all of that works out. Okay? Any questions? All righty. Let's see about 15 minutes worth of King of Kings. Oh, I haven't told you about Jeffrey Hunter. Folks, if you can't tell this, I'm winging this without my notes. They're in my office. I'm here. I've done this before. Jeffrey Hunter plays. They kind of had a search for who's going to play Jesus, sort of like looking for Scarlett O'Hara. And they chose this man. He was actually 36, but he looked like he was about 22 years old. And this movie then was christened I Was a Teenage Jesus because he has almost no gravitas. He sounds like Pat Boone. And that means absolutely nothing to anyone in this room. But he sounds like Pat Boone. No gravitas. What color would you say that man's eyes are? What is it? Well, they're not baby blue. They're kind of aqua. They're actually aquamarine. He has remarkably colored eyes. And the eyes of Jesus play a big role. You're going to see the eyes of Jesus, yay big. In fact, at one point at the baptism, Jesus and John the Baptist have an eye off. We see both sets of eyes. And this is the weirdest baptism scene. John doesn't baptize him. The movie is 3 hours long, and there's no action. It's not Ben-Hur. And it was a dud. And 3 years later, in 1964 and 1965, another studio produced The Greatest Story Ever Told, which was based on a novel by Fulton Osler, O-U-S-L-E-R, A Life of Jesus in the 1940s, entitled The Greatest Story Ever Told. It's directed by the great director George Stevens, who had just done Giant. He was a very meticulous movie maker, and he kept filming and filming and refilming and refilming, and it got more and more expensive and more and more expensive and longer and longer. The first cut was 6 hours long. The final cut was 3 hours and 19 minutes long. Now, Ben-Hur is longer than that, but Ben-Hur just whizzes by, sometimes literally with those horses. But watching the greatest story ever told is like watching the life of Jesus in real time. And Dr. Miller long ago christened it the slowest story ever told. It stars a Scandinavian actor, a very grave Scandinavian actor called Max von Sydow, Sydow, as Jesus. And Stevens then assembled around Sydow a whole host of movie stars. And all of a sudden, everyone and his dog was in this movie. Pat Boone is the angel at the tomb at the end. Do you remember Martin Landau? Anyone who Martin Landau was? He is in this. Jose Ferrer, you may not know of. David McCallum, do you remember I Spy? David McCallum, Roddy McDowell, Dorothy McGuire. I'm doing something on purpose. Shelley Winters. All righty. Edwin. Now, this is, you just proved that George Stevens was correct. When people said, you can't put all these celebrities in because everyone's going, oh, that's that. He said, 40 years from now, no one will know who these people are. And guess what? George, you were right. Except one. Can anyone tell me who plays the centurion? Who gets the centurion's recognition scene? How many of you do not know who John Wayne was? All right. We still know who John... It is so hokey. All of a sudden, John Wayne says, I can't do a John Wayne, but surely that he's standing out there in the rain. It is so ridiculous. Okay. But the most ridiculous one is Charlton Heston, who plays John the Baptist. Heston never got over this role. Actually, and when the soldiers come to arrest him, he gets in the water and he baptizes, they attack him. He tries to baptize him. Repent! Okay. I'm going to show you this. We have about 8 minutes of it, actually. This is to just show you sort of the tedium of it. It just, oh, God, there are just days of nothing happening. And when something is happening, there's this slow, plodding music. It starts out with this long deal with light, right? The nativity. Then there is a little snippet of the temptation of Jesus. And he goes up to the high place so you can see how high the place is. It's filmed in Utah. And this, one of the stars is really the scenery, which is really great. There's a little bit of snippet here with Jesus talking to his disciples under a bridge out in this great landscape. And I do it just listen to the music and listen to how slow the dialogue is. And to make it even more tedious, an old man starts on this side of the frame and then starts hobbling across the bridge one step at a time. This is a serious point. I'm going to make you laugh, but this is actually serious. And then I'm going to show you Charlton Heston baptizing the reluctant recruits. Then a Sermon on the Mount, just a brief Sermon on the Mount. And then we're going to see Pilate. Now, does anyone know who Telly Savalas was? Kojak. Kojak is Pilate. And he has one of the funniest lines. It wasn't funny when he said it, but it will be now. I hope. How many of you ever watched Seinfeld? All right, wait for it. Then what? The disciples, crucifixion, the recognition centurion, and all that kind of stuff. And then Easter, you'll get to see Pat Boone. Folks, this killed the cinematic life of Jesus groundswell. It was so long, it was so tedious, that no one has made one really like it ever since. All righty?